Hey guys, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're watching the 2000 era classic Charlie's Angels, starring Lucy Liu, Drew Barrymore, and Cameron Diaz, and Bill Murray, and Sam Rockwell. I don't know how this movie got such a good cast, but it's more fun than I thought it would be, actually. We thought this would be a bomb, and it was actually kind of fun. So, enjoy our conversation. Consider joining the Patreon, patreon.com/myopia. And, of course, if you have not done so, rate and review. We've gotten some weird reviews lately. I don't know why. But positive reviews always help boost us on the charts. So, wherever you get us, please consider a review. Thanks, guys. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we talk about a movie back when billionaires were forces for good. We watched 2000's Charlie's Angels. I'm host Nick Hoffman. On panel we've got...
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to PopDose.com, and I've also got three ladies working for me, and those bitches better have my money, damn it.
And I'm the Matt. I live on a boat.
Yes, I can confirm he does.
Okay.
So Starfish.
It is the Matt.
The Matt. So we're talking about McGee's first movie, the first thing he directed after doing the music video for, I believe, Smash Mouth's All-Star and Pretty Fly for a White Guy by The Offspring.
Oh, so. Well, why didn't he retire after that? I mean, those are the classics. I mean, he's got his Citizen Kane in the can.
That's right. He's also did Fastball's The Way. Smash Mouth's Why Can't We Be Friends? Walking on the Sun. He worked. I mean, it's kind of like, I imagine the logic was, hey, didn't Michael Bay do music videos first? Let's see if we can find another music video guy.
Well, David Fincher started as a music video guy, and he actually, you know, knew what the fuck he was doing. McGee?
Hey, I thought this movie was pretty good.
Sure you did, Matt. Sure you did.
It's the right. Matt.
Okay, sorry. The Matt. Which means you get one more line, and then we're going to cut you out of the rest of this episode. So, he did Charlie's Angels, followed after that by Charlie's Angels, the sequel, which is also Stay Tuned. Then We Are Marshall, which is a movie I pranked. Then Terminators 5? What? Salvation. Whatever number.
Salvation, I think, was 4.
4. Then he did Salvation 4. That's kind of it. I mean, he still works. He's fine. Don't worry about him. His next movie is called The Uglies, so I'm assuming that's tasteful as well. So, where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with a plot summary. Matt, do you want to give it?
Okay, so there's apparently a very wealthy man named Charles Townsend, Charlie, who has a bunch of attractive young women working as detectives for him. And they investigate the kidnapping of a tech billionaire who supposedly has this very important piece of software that could undermine everyone's right to privacy. Pre-9/11, how naive.
Very good. So.
And so hijinks ensue.
Yes.
Okay, so right off the top, we're introduced to our three angels. This is based on a 1970s TV show. So like every 1970s TV show in the early 90s or the late 90s, early 2000s, they tried to get it into a movie. Like
they even riff on that like in the opening scene. Like, oh, they made a T.J. Hooper movie or T.J. Hooker.
T.J. Hooker.
Yes, T.J. Hooker, which that. Is William Shatner's program, which is phenomenal. That's a solid joke. Oh, come on. That was funny.
I've never seen any of these. I mean, have any of you seen the original TV show?
No.
Well, I've seen T.J. Hooker. I've not seen Charlie's Angels. But, I mean, but that was what was going on, right? Because we've done, similarly, we've done Mission Impossible, which was one of these, right? Because it's a show from the 60s. The Saint by Val Kilmer, another one of these.
Wild Wild West.
Yeah, yes. Wild Wild West. The two Addams Family movies are one of these. Josie and the Pussycats, which is... actually probably going to come up soon. That's a fun movie, fun-ass movie. But, I mean, Scooby-Doo we've done. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of all movies were at this time.
Oh, good Lord. I.
We did a good one. The Fugitive.
Oh, The
is
Fugitive,
one of these.
Yes.
I guess also we already mentioned Mission Impossible, but the first one of those is a fantastic movie. I like that movie very much. This one, of course, is based on a... God, it's...
the worst 70s, like, women doing karate by sticking out, like, karate chop. I will say, more than anything, though, this movie to me isn't, like, what it could have been is, like, the Brady Bunch, where they're fish out of water. It's weird. Instead, they're the better version of it. They're making fun of the better version of it, which is Austin Powers. This has Austin Powers setups and jokes the whole time. They just can't do it. They're not Austin Powers. But that's clearly what they're aping.
They're aping that, but, I mean, this is taken way too seriously, you know?
I don't think they take this seriously, but I know what you're saying, because the jokes are not parody jokes. They're straight jokes. You need to make this more cheesy. This needs to be 30% cheesier. Though, I don't know how you fix this movie. And, of course, despite the mixed reviews, it made $250 million. It made $260 million in 2000 bucks. So that's that's a huge success. That is a colossal success. Okay, so, I mean, as you kind of started out, we have John Forsythe voicing Charlie. You guys all know John Forsythe, I assume, right?
The original Charlie.
Yeah, he's the original Charlie, which is, of course, only for the people in the 80s and their audience, I guess.
Good morning, angels.
I was convinced he was the dude who was Kit from
Knight Rider.
And Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World. That's who I thought it was. That's exactly who he sounds like. He sounds like Mr. Feeny.
Angels were lost.
That's right. But yeah, so, I mean, we should mention that this has, like, the greatest 2000s cast ever put together. You got your Bill Murray before he really was Bill Murray. I mean, he was Bill Murray, but, like, he was not everyone's fan favorite, let's put him on a t-shirt, Bill Murray, yet. That's going to come in 10 years. Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Lucy Liu are the big three, all of which were on the upward, like, trend at this point.
So, who still has a career of that cast?
Oh, Bill Murray does. Sam Rockwell does. Sam Rockwell here, who is essentially exactly playing his character from Iron Man 2. That's kind of it. I mean, even Kelly Lynch doesn't really have a huge career anymore.
Isn't Lucy Liu play Watson on like a Sherlock show?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Elementary. Which was canceled. On CBS. Oh, it was canceled?
I thought it was long gone.
Oh.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, she was like the only person that still has an acting career. I mean, Drew Barrymore's got a early morning talk show, and then Cameron Diaz has nothing. She quit acting.
Yeah, she's done. Yeah, Lucy Liu, the Elementary was canceled 2 years ago, 2019. But yeah, no, she hasn't done anything since a self-help book was published in 2013. I mean, you don't have to, I guess, do anything, but yeah, none of these people do much except for Sam Rockwell. I mean, Tim Curry, of course, had a stroke. But Tim Curry doesn't need to be in this movie. We watch him get an erection for 10 minutes.
What about Crispin Glover? Does he need to be in this movie?
Crispin Glover.
He's a thin man, right?
Yes.
He was impressive.
He doesn't say anything. The man is a star-studded actor. He doesn't have a single line, I don't think.
I think that's kind of the point. In the second movie, they actually build up his character more. He comes back. The idea is he's mute.
Have you seen the second one?
No.
I saw the second one in theaters back in the day. I remember nothing about it, but yeah, Crispin Glover's in there.
And if there was a third, he was actually supposed to come for that too, but there wasn't one.
I mean, Crispin Glover, of course, is George McFly. He's probably my favorite movie of all time. He's in Matt's favorite movie of all time, Beowulf, where he plays Grendel. And of course, he's in What's Eating Gilbert Grape and such, and Hot Tub Time Machine and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I have nothing wrong with him. He comes off as incredibly creepy. And in this movie, he actually gets to be physical, like actually do something. But again, they don't give him any lines. I don't know why he wanted this part, per se.
He could be trying to stretch himself. Like, I'm going to play a character who only screams incoherently when he sniffs women's hair.
Oh, God, that was so gross in this movie. How he tear out Drew Barrymore's hair and then sniff it.
Yeah, he cut off hair. And by the way, this is the second Crispin Glover movie. I forgot he was in this that we've done this season. Because he is in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Hey, where's the corkscrew?
Yes.
Everyone's trying to get laid. He's looking for the corkscrew. Have you seen the corkscrew? Which is the year before Back to the Future. Yeah, man. I mean, I know Matt doesn't let us set up a joke here, but like, it is weird that he's in this, right?
Well, here's all you need to know about this movie. This is a movie where they have the song Smack My Bitch Up playing underneath an action scene featuring a bunch of women.
Dude, that is Mick G all the way through, isn't it?
Which scene?
Oh, when they're fighting the Thin Man.
Yeah. The first one or the later one?
Oh, the first one. Bang, 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 bang.
I thought that fight scene was very well done.
It was, but I mean, at the same time, it just artistically made no sense. Because
why would you play the song Smack Your Bitch Up when it's a movie where the women are the heroes?
And they even had the lyrics. It's like, take my pitch up, smack my up.
Yeah, they do. Like, it's incredible.
Well, I was mostly thinking of the fight choreography. I didn't even remember the song.
I'm not sure if that's an insult to the Prodigy or what.
But, okay, so, essentially, Charlie, we don't know much about how he gets assigned these things. What we kind of get is that people seek out Charlie to ask them to go on these missions. They're extra governmental. He's just a billionaire who uses his private money to do these spy missions,
yeah,
apparently.
They never explain what this organization is.
I think they're a private detective agency.
They never explain that.
That's just it. Like, so, in other words,
there's a sign on the door, Charles Townsend Detective Agency or something like that.
Ah, oh, boy. Okay. Hold for effect. Hold.
No,
for
I'm just
effect.
Curious. You cut us off twice. So what do you want to say?
I'm saying that's where it's in.
Great. So a billionaire has a private detective agency that I assume costs huge piles of money.
Yeah.
Right. Because they have helicopters. They have like training, and these women are sent to the four winds. Right. Because essentially they have a beeper that goes off, and they have to go. Right. Which we'll get to.
Yeah, and they're all like, see, Lucy Liu's character is like an astronaut. Drew Barrymore's was a former police officer. I don't know what Cameron Diaz did. So how much is he paying them?
Well, here's the weird thing about this movie and how these characters are introduced. Cameron Diaz is introduced by sticking her ass in front of the camera and just wiggling.
No, we
got
to go through these one by one. So like Matt was alluding to, we're introduced to them as three exceptional women. Right, and we have Cameron Diaz like nearly killing her driving instructor, driving on two wheels with those braces on. We have Lucy Liu doing dressage with a horse and then becoming an astronaut. We have Drew Barrymore punching out her drill instructor as a police woman, like, and then they're trained in martial arts. Presumably, we don't see any of that, which means they're all Mary Sues, right? And then Charlie, I guess through Bill Murray, gets them these missions, right? And he calls them his angels, which is weird. That's something that they probably should have fixed, but did not fix. It's just weird. Charlie then assigns them a mission from Eric Knox, who is played by Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
Sam Rockwell is playing a computer genius because he has shaggy hair.
Yeah,
the first of three men with shaggy hair.
Yeah, which multi-billionaire has shaggy hair? It's not Zuckerberg because he has real short hair. Is it Musk?
Well, Elon Musk did.
Was way before those guys.
Supposed to be Bill Gates because Bill Gates had very shaggy hair in 2000. Although, what's funny to me is Sam Rockwell is in like Tony Stark's house. Did you notice that? It's the one that's in Malibu overlooking the Hollywood Hills. Which is a house he blows up in the second Iron Man movie. So there you go. Synergy. It's full circle. It's a tapestry. But at first, the whole thing is that Eric Knox believes his voice recognition system has been stolen by a guy named Roger Corwin, who's played by Tim Curry. At this point, we run out of scenery because Tim Curry eats it all.
Wait, time out. Roger Corwin.
I know. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. It's stupid.
No, it's genius is what that is.
Well, he has a car that says Corwin on it because he's like has his own like racing team.
He does.
And he makes jokes about like, I got into auto racing. They said I got into auto racing because I had a declining libido.
I fired them. No,
and
really.
This is where Drew Barrymore licks the steering wheel, right?
Yes. And we got to get here, but like, this is a movie made for boys between the ages of 12 and 18, because that's it. All it is like vague sexuality. And like we said, we're introduced to the women doing various things.
I just want to point out that Nick has his hand in his pocket
right
now.
I'm playing with my keys, I swear. So we're introduced to the angels, and I forget the order, but we're introduced to them doing various things. Drew Barrymore has just finished having sex with Tom Green, as you do.
Who is the funniest character in this movie? The Chad.
You've said that 6 times.
I haven't.
Your favorite. We will tattoo it on your ass. Show us your Chad tattoo.
You know what? I'm going to give Matt this. The Chad is great.
Oh, and by the way, this, I think, is where the incels get the term Chad from.
An incel Chad is like a stud muffin. This guy's weird.
No, not. A Chad is someone who doesn't get laid.
No, that's a beta or something. A Chad is supposed to be like an alpha man, and Chad is not.
How do you know this?
He's a member on Reddit.
I have a life, thank you.
A life you spent learning about incels.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Obviously not, you know what incel language is.
Yeah, I know none of this stuff. I can look, I'm sure. Oh, here, there's an article on Vox about incels.
So this is the luckiest non-Chad in the world. He's a guy who's either not all there mentally or constantly stoned, who has managed to seduce Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, he's getting laid by Drew Barrymore. I'd say that he's supposed to be a player.
Just like Tom Green was back in 2000 for all of, 5 months?
Well, that's right.
Yeah, I think Freddy Got Fingered was the end of it. But there's also that movie Road Trip. Where he's like this creepy guy who gets off on feeding mice to snakes.
I've not seen either of those, but I remember hearing about Freddy Got Fingered, and it was just so weird.
I heard it was just like the worst movie ever made, so I made sure not to see it. Even then, I had some degree of taste.
I've heard that it was some sort of like Salvador Dali-esque movie where the surrealism and the fact that it was so bad was the point, but I don't think that was true.
Well, but here's the thing. He did it in a terrible way. Like, the problem is, I'm not going to say he's revolutionary because he's not, but he's almost Jackass. Do you know what I mean? Like, had he figured it out, like, I bet you the Jackass guys saw what he did and then they went further. Because, like, that's what he was. Like, if you've ever seen the show, it's him doing stupid pranks, right? Like,
well, that was just Tom Green in general on MTV.
But what is Jackass with them doing stupid pranks just to each other?
So Tom Green is like John the Baptist who paves the way for the Jesus Jackass.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
You know what? That is the best description I've heard of Tom Green ever.
Yeah, so just because you asked, this is his thing. The year before this, he was in Superstar. He did Charlie's Angels and Road Trip in the same year. Freddy Got Fingered was the next year, and then his truly last real thing was Stealing Harvard, which was the year after that. And Stealing Harvard was fine.
You're forgetting his appearance in Clone High.
Yes, which is the year after that, I guess, 2003. 2003. But, I mean, the thing to me is, don't add Tom Green. I know he's what you would call, I guess, cheap heat, right? Like, because he was huge at the time. It's the same thing, like, we cut from Drew Barrymore getting this beep, like, oh, she can't stay away for the Chad's terrible scrambled eggs, which look gross anyway. So she has to leave, and he goes, is it the Chad? He goes, yeah, it's the Chad. And then she drives off because she's just having fun with him. We then cut to Lucy Liu, who is an actress who has to make out with Matt LeBlanc. And that's when you know we're settled exactly in 2000. And then, of course, we see Drew Barrymore shake her – not Drew Barrymore. We see Cameron Diaz shake her ass for about 30 seconds.
Oh, the delivery man. I've already signed the papers, so just stick things in my slot.
Whackity smackity do. Yeah. It's nothing. She's a beautiful woman, so they get to have fun with it. This is – I mean, Mask is 94, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, she's been in a lot of stuff then. I mean, There's Something About Mary was 2000, so Fear and Loathing, she's in 98 too. My Best Friend's Wedding, she's in 97. She was
hot
stuff.
Wait, she was in Fear and Loathing?
Oh, it's a bit part. She's a reporter. One of the reporters at the junket with the
Was she in the elevator?
Yeah,
that's
right. Yeah, the photographer fix up.
Yeah.
Although she is the titular best friend in My Best Friend's Wedding, which is kind of a stay tuned. That is Julia Roberts being absolutely nuts. And breaking up her best friend's wedding by trying to seduce him. And he's getting married to Cameron Diaz, who I think her father owns the New York or the Chicago White Sox. God, I shouldn't remember that. But movie podcast, right? Need to flex my movie muscles. But yeah, so we're introduced to her ass wearing Spider-Man underoos as she dances around the room, and they all end up hanging out with Charlie. We are also told that whoever Drew Barrymore hooks up with can't cook. We're hooked up with Lucy Liu wanting to cook but being terrible at it. And we're introduced to Cameron Diaz being a child.
Yeah, the most lethal muffin ever. Like, it embeds in the door.
In fact, I believe the joke is it's a Chinese fighting muffin, to which Lucy Liu goes, "I'm not even Chinese," which is...
They're not Chinese. They're not fighting. They're blueberry.
And at this point, we're also introduced to... Bill Murray, who plays Bosley, who is also a character from the show.
Yeah, so that introduction is so strange. Like, he comes in, and they all just swarm around him like a bunch of little girls, and their dad's going to read to them.
But that's
They're all, like, 30.
But to me, like, that's... You've hit the nail on the head. What's the problem with this? Which is, that's, I'm sure, exactly how it would happen in the 70s, where, like, he would come in looking like Roger Moore from James Bond, and the girls would flock to him. But this is a movie that came out in 2000. They need to have some sort of agency other than that. When Austin Powers did it, they did it because it was supposed to be a 60s throwback, and you're supposed to be shocked at how weird it is. We also haven't even mentioned how we got to this point, which is there's a plane. And on the plane...
Oh, LL Cool J is...
Who it turns out is really Cameron Diaz wearing like a Mission Impossible mask.
It was Drew Barrymore. Oh.
But yeah, so they get on the plane.
Cameron is driving the boat.
Yeah, we get on the plane, and there's, you know, I mean, his name is, I think, Pascal?
There's a guy with a bomb on the plane.
Yeah, there's a guy with a bomb who's changing it for blood diamonds, I guess, and they're going to blow up this weird jetliner, which doesn't make sense geographically. They then, you know, break out the emergency exit. You know,
let's hope everyone had their seatbelt on.
Yeah, right. And they jump out of the plane, and they tear off their masks to reveal the fact that LL Cool J is actually one of the angels.
Yeah, because one of the skeezy terrorist dude is like, "You bastard!" And she pulls the mask off. "You mean you bitch?"
That's right.
Lou skydives.
Yeah, and helps get the bomb off so that it explodes in the background, which is kind of a cool shot. And yeah, you know, that's how we're introduced to them being badass women. Most of the effects in this are fine. Like, this clearly had a lot of money behind it. The script is weird, but we'll get to it.
There's a script here?
Not really. Mostly. Kind of. Anyway, so, like I said, we're introduced to this idea that some important technology is stolen. We don't know exactly how the technology is supposed to work, per se. But
there's some techno babble about how this could destroy everyone's privacy, or if it was mated to the satellite technology belonging to Corwin, because they think that Corwin has stolen it.
Right.
And Corwin has it in his employ, Crispin Glover.
Which is like they figure him out because of like some like CCTV footage of this parking deck.
Yeah, when Tech Boy gets kidnapped.
Right. And the tech boy is, like I already mentioned, is Sam Rockwell. So we get kind of a Mission Impossible scene, funny enough, the one that goes so badly at the very beginning where they're at a cocktail party, where Bosley goes in with...
Chekhov's tooth microphone.
Yeah, has a tooth mic, and walks in with Lucy Liu and Cameron... No, and Drew Barrymore. And the idea is that they're going to, you know... Essentially, Corwin is going to talk up Bosley, and they're going to become friends.
And,
this the scene where there are sumo wrestlers and Tim Curry and Bill Murray are fighting? That was just...
And they have a teach the dorky girl how to flirt bit where Cameron Diaz is undercover as a waitress and Lucy Liu is giving her tips on how to toss her hair. It's like Jumanji.
Now, how does Cameron Diaz not know how to flirt?
Well, they have established her as actually being a 12-year-old. It's right, like she's wearing underoos, she's dancing around like an idiot, like they're making her seem really weird and childish.
I imagine there's some serious ugly duckling thing going on here because as a teenager she's really dorky looking and then she got hot.
Well, she's got that retainer that in the opening scene that she's in. But...
yeah, that's what they're trying to establish her as, a nerd or a geek, I guess. But
it's Cameron Diaz.
I know. She's all that syndrome. They don't go far enough for any of it. Also, it could just be that she's bad at relationships, which they clearly all are. The idea that Lucy Liu is desperately trying to impress Matt LeBlanc should tell you we're in trouble to begin with.
Bum, bum, bum.
I know. It's awful. We'll get there. But yeah, so they figure out the Thin Man and they try to get away. I don't know. Like, this dinner party is weird.
Yeah, they fight the Thin Man in an alley, which tactically is actually pretty clever. They can overwhelm him 3-on-1, but he tries to separate them individually because he's bigger than they are. So that's pretty clever. But they eventually can drive him off and rescue Tech Boy.
Yeah, so what's going on here is they're trying to get information on who these people are. This is where we do have that weird sumo wrestling fight, which is just awful.
That was...
I mean, again, this lets you know exactly where Tim Curry and Bill Murray are in their careers, that they would do this. Like, it's embarrassing. It's not funny. It's not fun.
How did Bill Murray agree to do this? I mean, because...
What's that Nick-ism? A dump truck full of money?
A dump truck full of cash. I mean, this movie had money behind it. It had to have. Like, if only you could tell from the effects. They paid someone to actually put money here, so I imagine Bill Murray got paid. That's all I can tell you. I can't tell you more than that. But like you said, they catch a glimpse of the Thin Man, as they call him, who leads them through the halls, yada, yada, yada. And we get the Charlie's Angels cliche, which is the three of them fighting. They strike different fake kung fu poses. They fight around. It's a decent fight scene. I mean, whoever was on set doing martial arts did their business. I guess a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. The other movie we're going to talk about tonight is Zorro, and they definitely had a fencer on staff. Like, if these movies work, which I'm not saying they do yet, we'll get to Final Judgment when we get there, it's because of the martial arts. It's not because of the humor in these movies, especially this one.
Was this before or after Drew Barrymore, like, ordered the entire menu from McDonald's?
Oh, that was... I apparently popped my bubble. I don't know what that was. It's around there, but remember, like, she's sticking her ass out for the guy who's the...
Yeah, that was Lucy Liu repairing the speaker box.
Yeah, a lot of their tricks only work if they just assume all men are hormonal idiots.
Oh, but that's it. That's what I'm saying. This is an Austin Powers thing. Like,
so, in other words, they're correct?
No, but that's the joke. You need... The reason Austin Powers works is somehow he jokes, somehow he flirts, and it works every single time, even though he's a hideous man, right? They give him those horrible teeth, they give him a horrible haircut, they make him annoying as hell, and the women all fall for him. That's what you'd call a joke. The idea that Drew Barrymore flirts with you, and you're just like, oh, I'm seduced by Drew Barrymore, well, no shit, right?
I would probably be a little skeeved out by licking the steering wheel.
Yeah, she's trying to get his attention at that point, but like, whatever. I mean, it's the same. We'll get to Tim. Let's talk about Tim Curry fighting an erection for 6 minutes.
He's supposed to be this billionaire. Why does his security team all fall for a bunch of PG-13 honey traps?
Because it's a PG-13. Like, if you don't buy that premise for half a second, this movie turns to ash immediately.
Because Lucy Liu is like massaging his face with her feet, and then Quentin Tarantino was part of a security team, so...
Well, I mean, but... Okay,
there we go.
Yeah, so... It's got a racy name. It's like the House of Ming or some nonsense. But there's this, like, Japanese tea garden.
And she was called Yoko, if I recall correctly.
I don't think that was her name. I think he just automatically called her Yoko.
Yes.
So it's an Asian massage parlor that's shaped like a Japanese tea garden. And... Lucy Liu, and my first thought was, fingers crossed that it's Lucy Liu who's the masseuse. because already that we're stepping into dangerous ground. But she does a flip onto the table and starts massaging his back by walking on his back. Fine. But it's Tim Curry, so he goes, oh, yes, oh my goodness, oh bother. And you're just like, Tim Curry, we don't need you to have an erection for this entire... He goes, oh, no, this is fine, oh my. Oh.
This is why he agreed to be in the movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But essentially she does the Vulcan neck pinch with her feet.
And knocks him unconscious.
Right. Yes. Which they then... But then, the thing I feared most, which is, then what if Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz were in Asian face, which then they appear wearing kimonos with dark hair and white face paint.
And then turning Japanese place in the background.
Which, I mean, like, we were so close to not being racist, and then pow, right in the racism. So they then go through his stuff. Yep. They steal his Palm Pilot. They get a copy of his keys. Just as you think he's about to wake up, Lucy Liu is massaging him again, and we can see right up her skirt because McGee directed this movie good.
To be frank, Lucy Liu is massaging him, and we can see right up her skirt. That is the best sentence I've heard all week.
But yeah, so they track the data. This gives them access, again, to a very Mission Impossible scene, which is...
Not just a very Mission Impossible scene. It's the Mission Impossible scene.
With more backflips.
Well, more backflips and without any of the technical bother, right? They're just like, let's be sexy. Although, this sequence, we can't... I could spend... You could write a film paper on this sequence, right? Because... They do the exact same thing where you cut to, I believe it's Lucy Liu giving the narration, but it's essentially Tom Cruise explaining how the mission starts, and they fade into how it starts, which is there are two directors. They have two separate keys. They have to log in at the same time to go into this room. This room is pressure sensitive and has like thermal imaging so you can see people move. When you get inside, you have access to the mainframe. So the first thing we've got to do is seduce the two directors, and they're at a strip club. Right?
Yeah.
Smash cut to a strip club.
I think they're supposed to be belly dancers.
A PG-13 strip club. Okay.
The most I remember from this scene is the German
the Oompa band.
That's the second director, the one who looks like Dan Castellaneta.
Yes.
The first one is just a sweaty guy watching two belly dancers. And at least here, they didn't make the two look Persian. Because they already made him look Japanese, and we have our limits. But they're wearing... But Drew Barrymore is, again, orientaled up a little bit as she steals the beer bottle to make the fake fingies.
Yes.
Right? We then cut to the German Oompa band, where, once again, we have Bill Murray around, and they're just all wearing dirndls.
Bill Murray playing the sousaphone.
Oh, and he... Which
has got a camera in it.
I will say, though, this... When Bill Murray enters the scene... The movie makes sense because he plays a straight man. That's all it is. And he doesn't want to be a part of any of these missions, but he's like, look, all you have to do is act charming and we can hear you with your tooth. And he's like, ha ha, right? Like he is not the kind of person you'd want to hang out with at a party, but he's just interesting enough. And even here at the Oompa band, he does it. He's fine.
Or whatever they
Dude,
were doing.
And they hand him a basket of pretzels.
Yeah.
And his hench buddy is like, this is the wrong address. He goes, shut up. It's funny. It's very funny. But at this point, they have the tools.
Well, I mean, that scene is exactly what this movie is supposed to be about. It's like, okay, we've got three hot women in skimpy clothing trying
spy
to...
Spy shit.
Yes.
But that's why this sequence, despite the weird belly dancing nonsense, is what works the best when they actually have, like, oh, a twist and another twist of just, like, I don't care.
And Charlie is rich enough to have 3D printers in 2000.
Yes.
Well, yes, but remember, if this is just ripping off Mission Impossible, that's all that is in Mission Impossible because that's how it ends with John Voight having – or with Tom Cruise wearing the John Voight mask, right? Like – You can't mess with the technology. I mean, we're not to the fact that apparently Cameron Diaz knows the bird call of every bird North America.
Oh.
Because that's how the movie ends.
The Pygmy Bat Hatch or whatever that was.
Oh, and they only live on this one island in...
Carmel, California.
Thank you. Yeah.
Which is lovely this time of year.
Although I will say the sexiest part of this movie is the part that happens after that with Lucy Liu in that leather dress.
Oh, my God. So the way they break in is she pretends to be a corporate...
Efficiency expert.
Yes. And she is wearing essentially a bondage dress.
And cracking a whip.
Yeah. And so she walks through a Dilbert cartoon.
This movie is just promising me a good time in this moment.
Yeah, she
right
basically leads a communist revolt in the engineering department dressed as a dominatrix.
Well, I mean, okay, so the thing is...
Go on.
Yeah, right. Communism, it's never been more seductive. So apparently there was supposed to be some sort of, you know, corporate raider type coming, but next week. So everyone's thrown off their game.
Hey, coming? Phrasing.
Yeah, that's right. So Lucy Liu goes, well, I'm here now. And one by one, the engineers just follow her to this auditorium.
Melissa McCarthy is the personal assistant here. It's like, I had you down for next week, not this week. I don't know what the problem is. And then Lucy Liu's like, that's what I'm here to find out.
But again, and they film it like, well, actually a movie that came out before this. They film it like a scene out of Office Space.
They film it with them focused on Lucy Liu's ass for two shots.
We're about to get to it, but when Cameron Diaz is doing the all-white suit thing to get down that hallway, the establishing shot is her ass, as though you've seen her ass before. So now we would recognize it when we have to figure out who she is.
So Aeon Flux had already come out on MTV at this point. And,
oh, dude, 100%. McGee watched Aeon Flux. It was muted, but he watched Aeon Flux.
But he got some of the hand gestures?
Yeah.
It was on TV on the bar last night. The sound was muted, but he got the gist of it.
Yeah. I will say the best part of this joke to me is Lucy Liu, as, you know, this whatever, efficiency expert, you know, saying some guy's idea is good, clutching his head to her bosom, et cetera, causing the all-male engineering staff to go crazy. Fine. The costumes on Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz to make them look like yes men is incredible. Like that actually works very, very well. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, even more so because at one point they have to reveal that it's Cameron Diaz for some reason. I don't know why she wouldn't keep the costume on while she was in the all white suit. It would somehow make it easier if something goes wrong to say, I'm not an angel. But, like, she takes off the mustache dramatically, and so you're like, oh, that was Cameron Diaz the whole time.
You figure her sticking her ass at the camera
that's right.
again,
but again like,
would
that's,
be enough.
The camera decides to show the opposite door by focusing on her ass and then through her legs. You're just like, McGee, we get it.
There's only one way to get through here. Be invisible.
So they dress all in white, and somehow that makes them invisible. I didn't get that.
It doesn't make sense.
Plus, they got the great big old eye patch thing too.
They do.
Yeah.
It's like a ninja outfit. It does not work. None of the science works here. Don't worry. She gets to the end. She opens the door and she puts a little wireless USB plug in the back, and we're golden because no one would ever think to check that. Okay. Smash cut. At this point. They have gotten Sam Rockwell, right? That was at the end of the fight with the Slender Man. We've been introduced to Vivian Wood. Slender Man, yes, that's right. Slender Man, yes, we've captured Slender Man. I think here's where we have the date montage.
Yeah, yeah.
okay, so essentially, Sam Rockwell...
I don't know how to... you shake, I bake. I want to shake.
That's right. So Kelly Lynch and Sam Rockwell... are like, hey, so can we check out this technology to make sure they don't have our software? And they're like, we have Bosley in charge of that. I'm sure that wasn't significant in any way to tell you that. So Sam Rockwell's like, look, Drew Barrymore, why don't you come over, check to make sure there's nothing going wrong with my house. Because at this point, her and the Chad, they're shut down, right? Because she tells him, it's the Chad. I'm sorry.
It might be the Chad.
It might be the Chad. Matt LeBlanc at this point goes on a date with Lucy Liu, kinda.
Oh, there's that scene that's It's supposed to be him and Lucy Liu, but it's Matt LeBlanc on a film set. Damn you, Salazar!
Yeah, it's set up that you think she just got killed.
That's right. But, I mean, and then they pan out and she gets up and like, that was a good take. I mean, but what you need is a McBain, like, Mendoza! Like, it's whatever. But she's decided
My
to...
eyes, the goggles do nothing.
And Cameron Diaz and that one of the waiters from Owen Wilson. That scene...
Luke Wilson.
Go to Soul Train.
Which is, yes. Again, another scene we should talk about for years.
You know what? I want Matt to talk about this scene.
Well, apparently in the dream that leads to Cameron Diaz dance around her underwear, she wants to be like a popular dancer. So she ends up on Soul Train.
We gotta stop. The dream that she has is her scene from The Mask. Where she's dancing to that whatever song is first, but then eventually dances to Cuban Pete. That she essentially dreams that she's in a better movie, which she was already in.
And so her dream comes true by going to Soul Train and dancing to Baby Got Back.
I like big butts like hell.
Which she doesn't have one to speak of, which I guess is part of the joke.
Which is the joke. We got to describe this. Somehow Luke Wilson, I mean, the idea is that Luke is this dude who works for a catering company, so he knows everyone on all these productions, so he's like, look, I know someone who got me tickets to Soul Train.
Hey, Nick, flip your hair. Flip your goddamn hair.
Well, he's got enough hair, it would work.
But the whole...
So do you.
Matt is just judging us because we don't have a high and tight. A nice fade, go. Yeah.
Are the scissors broken in your house, son?
I'm trying to toss my hair, but I don't have any hair, so it's like giving me whiplash.
You see that man? He has hair you can set a clock to.
Johnny Unitas right there.
Yeah, so they essentially get to Soul Train because presumably Luke Wilson has worked for the caterer as a buddy. And she's like, oh boy, dancing. I like dancing. And she gets asked to be one of the fly girls on stage. Which, again, if you've ever seen Soul Train, which they were apparently trying to bring back in the early 2000s, early 90s, God help you. The idea is that a band starts playing, and then a whole bunch of people are dancing, and they're filming the dancing, right? Because that's what Soul Train is. Instead, they cue up the music, and she's the only one on stage, and decides that this is her, like, this is like a Hollywood from the 1950s, like, everyone's going to clap for her, and she's fantasizing that they're clapping for her.
And she's doing the cheesiest 80s dance moves you can imagine.
Oh, God, this is the whitest scene that has ever existed. To the point where, at the end, they start chanting, go, white girl, go, white girl, go.
Go, white girl, go, white girl, go. Go, white girl, go,
and meanwhile, Pete is trying to make conversation with the bouncers. They're just completely ignoring him.
Which you would! But also, at that point, Owen Wilson is a handsome 29-year-old guy. Which still feels too old for Soul Train. Like, everyone here should be, like, in their early 20s. And
he was a 29-year-old guy at this point?
Yeah, he was born in 71, so 2000, he's 29.
Oh, good Lord.
And he already had an Academy Award nomination under his belt, right?
For what?
Screenplay. They write all of Wes Anderson's screenplays. I thought for Rushmore they were nominated.
Oh, I thought The Royal Tenenbaums was the first script that got nominated from an Oscar from that group.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I know he was actually in Royal Tenenbaums. He was him and Owen Wilson were cut from Rushmore.
Hey, wow.
Can you imagine though if your brother, you're Luke and he's Owen, your brother's Owen, like, because they started at about the same. Right, like they're both handsome guys. They're both writers. They wanted to write more than they wanted to act. And then all of a sudden, Owen is like, in everything. Oh God.
Well, they both are.
I mean, now they are. Yeah, I guess. But I think of Owen as more of someone who can open a movie than
Hansel. He's so hot right now.
I mean, to be fair, I think he's incredible in Inherent Vice as well. Midnight in Paris. I don't like Woody Allen, but I like Midnight in Paris.
Woody Allen's a piece of trash, but Midnight in Paris is a good movie.
It's probably his last good movie. At least his most recent good movie.
I remember Woody Allen won an Oscar for that, and he didn't show up.
For directing or best picture?
Screenplay.
Screenplay, okay. Wow. He was also the title character in Marmaduke.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, because it's 2021 and that's where we are in our lives, he's excellent in Loki. Owen Wilson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The
Mobius.
Yeah, the TV show that was filmed downtown.
I always love when they pretend it's not actually downtown. Like, it was just filmed in, like, Georgia State Library and stuff, and you're just like...
Well, I mean, the Loki, the TVA was the Marriott Marquis, but...
Right, yeah. No, the stacks. When you're going through the stacks, that's the Georgia State Law Library.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, anyway. So, I mean, at this point, we can kind of get through it. Drew Barrymore, I mean, is getting banged by Sam Rockwell, which means he's probably on a small step stool. but post-coitus, she's wrapped in a blanket.
Ooh, toga.
That's right.
Which is a line in this movie.
It is absolutely a line in the movie. When all the bad people show up, including Crispin Glover and Kelly Lynch. Kelly Lynch has instead decided to go seduce Bill Murray.
And roofies him.
And roofies him. And they kidnap him.
So who loses in that situation? Bill Murray or Kelly Lynch? I mean...
Who is more powerful? Probably still Bill Murray.
I mean, none
had a lot of heat at the time.
Yeah, someone tries to kill Cameron Diaz in the bathroom. They do a drive-by in Lucy Liu, and Sam Rockwell tries to shoot her out of Drew Barrymore out a window.
Yes, yes. And he does for a brief second before we rewind and see what actually happens.
Yeah, there's no tension in this scene because they immediately show what happens, but still. Also, Kelly Lynch, we have not done a movie with until this, except for... Cineprov ripped Cocktail, which is not on this feed. Patreon.com/Cineprov. But she is in the Secret Lost episode. She was the female lead in Mr. Magoo, which is that episode we did and we lost. So maybe we'll do it again. She's also in one of the greatest Lifetime movies of all time called Cyber Seduction, His Secret Life, where a teenage boy gets addicted to pornography.
So he's a teenage boy.
At least it wasn't My Stepson, My Lover.
Well, there you go. Is that a real one?
Yeah.
Oh, God help me. So Kelly Lynch comes in. Like you said, they shoot him because now they're trying to track down Charlie because Sam Rockwell believes that, the first thing that happens is Tim Curry's gets killed.
Yeah, Crispin Glover slashes him open.
Yeah, there's he's just sitting, is it like in a sauna or something? Whatever.
Yeah.
He gets hot tub, and he gets his throat cut, and yeah.
What are you doing here?
Next, Drew Barrymore, right, gets shot, and Lucy Liu is in Matt LeBlanc's trailer, making dinner and has made him a Chateaubriand, has made a chocolate souffle. And again, because it's a joke from 20 years before, they shoot it with machine guns. Oh, and the souffle collapses. Wouldn't you know it?
To add insult to injury. Not only do they try to kill her, they ruin her food.
You know what? Kill Bill came out 3 years after this, right?
With Lucy Liu.
Yes, with Lucy Liu. This movie so wants to be Kill Bill. I mean, it's an action movie that's centered around women, and there are times, I'm pretty sure, especially in Volume 2, this exact scene plays out, right?
Wait, are you telling me that Quentin Tarantino would have the bald face lyness to steal a scene from another movie?
Yes, but I'm not sure whether or not he had his pants unzipped at this point.
There aren't enough feet.
Lucy Liu is teaching Cameron Diaz to toss her hair reminded me of the stuff from the recent Jumanji movie, where it's Jack Black.
God. Teaching, what's her name?
Karen Gillan.
Yeah, Karen Gillan. Can you imagine? So
come along, Pond.
Is Die Hard a sexy movie for Bruce, Quentin or not? It's a lot of feet stuff. A lot of good looking Bruce Willis feet.
Doesn't he have to walk on glass, though?
He does.
That's kind of a turnoff.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Maybe he's into S&M foot stuff.
Oh,
this
my.
This is not a productive area of discussion. It's just important minds.
I'm sure the scene with Lucy Liu giving Tim Curry his massage.
Oh, that, like, that was it.
Stepping on his face. Oh, boy.
He's the only one pushing for a 4K release of this movie, but that's why. But
if you listen close to the soundtrack, you'd hear him hyperventilating in the background.
Hey, man, it was all about the feet. It's all because violence is everywhere, even our massage parlors, man. At this point, I don't know, Cameron Diaz is at a date, right? After the Soul Train thing, she goes to the restroom.
Oh, and there's a foot sequence in that, too.
There is. But essentially, after she, like, dances and everyone cheers for her, she goes to the ladies' room, and there's a dude with a chain who strangles her, which she kicks the shit out of. But they essentially have this rendezvous point, which is like a little park just across the street from their headquarters. Right as Drew Barrymore shows up.
Wearing some clothes she stole from some 10-year-olds. Well, they gave it to her.
Well, the scene is...
Well, the scene involves an E.T. poster in their room.
Well,
she falls from this building, rolls down the hill, and they're discussing whether or not they'd seen boobs before. Right as she comes up, completely naked, except for an inflatable, like a pool raft,
and
in a backyard without a pool.
And so she then shows up at the Angels headquarters driving one of the kids' bikes wearing, like, 10-year-old boy clothes.
Wearing a wrestling t-shirt, if I recall correctly. And she's about to say, guys, he's trying to... Essentially, they're all like, what happened to you? What happened to you? She's trying to say that Sam Rockwell was the guy behind it right as their headquarters explodes.
And they aren't immediately reduced to hamburger because they were pretty close to it.
Yeah, they're, like I said, they're just across the street from this building. In the rubble, they're looking for any information, anything that will help them find it. When they hear Bosley speaking through his tooth mouth guard. But he's essentially, at this point, we've had a montage of him trying to figure out how to escape, which is funny because he clearly has none of the training the girls do, because he's like tearing apart his bed sheets for no reason, which is funny.
And somehow he has a baseball that he just throws around.
I am legitimately surprised we didn't get the Great Escape theme here.
Well, right, because they do the baseball of the Great Escape.
Right, exactly.
I mean, like, you're going to rip off... But that's something else that pisses me off. That's what Austin Powers would have done. For half a second, they'd have done do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Even if they do, like, the Simpsons knockoff version, you get it.
Yes.
Right? But they don't. Well, why go halfway to a joke? Ugh, whatever. Who cares? McGee didn't care enough. We shouldn't care either.
Well, the whole thing... how exactly does this tooth microphone get reactivated?
No, maybe he has never took it out.
Yeah, but why it hadn't been working this whole time, we don't know.
No. It was a thing where he's throwing the baseball and then
hits him in the jaw.
Throat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get the whole theme where...
He's trying to explain where he is. He goes, I don't know, I'm in a building. It's like a dungeon.
I can smell the ocean. I look out the window, I can see the ocean.
And then he goes, and then Cameron Diaz, who's been ignoring him the whole time, because why would you listen to any of this nonsense, she does the bird call, and she goes, I know it's this hum, which only lives in Carmel. Fine. Luckily, they're very conveniently nearby.
And then they figure out that it's one of three properties, one of which is owned by Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell, yeah. Right.
Oh, it's an anagram. What was it? Xerox Corporation, where... Well, the whole joke is...
Yes, Xeron, which is just Knox backwards.
Right.
Yeah.
And they go there, and we see Sam Rockwell dancing to rap music, and...
They're infiltrated via the Chad.
Yes.
Yes, the Chad in his little tugboat.
The Chad is great.
I also like, after a night when everyone kind of gets laid, that's the beginning of the third act. There are worse ways to start a third act than all of your principal characters getting laid.
Oh my god, I mean, the way the third act begins in this movie is all the angels, like, taking off their scuba suits, and then we just see a bunch of naked women from the back.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, Charlie can't shell out for dry suits, so you take them off and you got your clothes underneath.
No, it's because they're doing commando, right?
Oh.
That's the scene where he gets off the boat, he takes off the wetsuit. Or no, I guess True Lies.
That's True Lies.
True Lies. He takes off the wetsuit, they suit up. Like, that's what it is. It's a beachfront suit up. But again, they can't decide what movie they're making. That's the most frustrating thing to me. You could do that, but then it's your movie, right? And I know the problem is in did anyone see the 2016 one?
Yeah. I heard that was bad.
I assume it was because it's after 9/11, it has to be grim and gritty, and that worked for Tomb Raider. The Alicia Vikander version of Tomb Raider was better.
I remember hearing the song that was associated with that, with Ariana Grande, Miley Cyrus, and then Lana Del Rey. And some reason that existed.
You know what? If you want to make it a Lady Power movie with a Lady Power soundtrack, I get it. But
they do have independent women's song in this one.
Yes! That's what you want to do if you make... want to make this an independent woman, independent power movie.
Anyway, so what do we got? They fight everyone. Chad is there. They find Knox. They get captured. They get whatever.
Well, Cameron Diaz fights Kelly Lynch, and then there's that whole scene where Pete calls her, and then...
Drew Barrymore fights Kelly Lynch, right?
Well, Drew Barrymore fights all like the goons because they tie her to a chair.
They have her tied to a chair. And then she lies.
She lies and says that she's going to moonwalk out of there, and she does not moonwalk out of there.
That's right. She's tied to a chair. They capture her. I keep wanting to say the Chad. Knox has tape over her lips. He kisses her, and he has to get out of there. They fight. Yeah, I know.
Because he's going to kill Charlie, who he thinks killed his dad in Vietnam.
That's right.
Charlie the whole missile thing. He's waiting for Charlie to call Bosley.
That's right. And he has to do the shitty movie thing of keeping him on the phone for 60 seconds or whatever, which is the worst vamping you've ever seen. Cameron Diaz is looking for either her or Bosley. She finds Bosley. Bosley kind of escapes himself, sort of.
Well, she's having a conversation with Pete, her kind of boyfriend, at like the worst possible time.
That's right. Who's calling from a payphone because it's 2000 and sometimes you still needed a payphone, apparently. Lucy Liu, meanwhile, is on the roof trying to block his signal from finding Charlie.
And she fights the thin man.
And so we, again, break up. We have fight scenes, which are fine. The fighting, I think, is fine in this movie. She smashes her gateway computer because it's taking too long. And while fighting the thin man, turns out that he finds Charlie anyway. So right as the three meet back up, where the thin man and Kelly Lynch get tied to something and pulled off the building...
Yeah, and meanwhile, Knox, who you'd think was going off to kill Charlie, it turns out he wasn't going off to kill Charlie at all. He's hanging around there with a helicopter with a rocket launcher on it.
To blow them up, yep.
You know, he would have succeeded if he hadn't done that.
Well, he also kills both of his henchmen, right? Because we do not see Kelly Lynch or the Thin Man die.
The Thin Man shows up in the sequel, if I recall correctly.
Well, right, but he does blow up the whole building with an explosive.
Yes.
He does not care about his hench peoples, which is when you start thinking, maybe there's a reason why the henchmen work with first the Joker and then the Penguin. Sometimes, you know, management just doesn't work out. Somehow Bosley has escaped by this point, shows up with like a Ford Bronco because someone hadn't told him that would be awkward.
Was it a white Bronco?
It was blue, luckily enough. But they then drive to this location in some beach in Southern California. I think Malibu is what they say.
And Lucy Liu shoots like a harpoon that the cable on and climb onto the helicopter.
That's right.
He's going to try and blow up Charlie's house.
Drew Barrymore is upset because I guess she had sex with him. I don't know.
And he then tried to murder her. I'd be a bit mad too.
Well, sure. But technically, they tried to murder all three of them.
Even more reason to be mad.
That's fair. If I recall correctly, Lucy Liu disconnects the power supply or the controls, the helicopter, and Cameron Diaz reprograms the missiles. So instead of being laser guided, it's heat seeking. Cameron Diaz literally has to pull Drew Barrymore off from punching Sam Rockwell in the face. Which, you know, I get. He has a punchable face.
Yes.
The helicopter explodes, and then they all smash cut to washing up on the beach like we're watching Lost.
And then they go into Charlie's cabin, and then we get the whole thing with, good morning, angels.
Yeah, they are so fangirling over Charlie. I mean, he's their boss. He's not like a celebrity.
But he's never met them. That's the whole thing. They've never met him before. And they thought that they'd find... Because they don't know where he lives either. He's never seen them before. They've never seen him before. Presumably, he's watching them through a camera. But...
Pretty quick for an old man. Like, his cigar is still warm in the ashtray.
Well, but what we get at the end is that he's just not a very substantial-looking person. Because he's just on the beach with them, watching them on the beach. So presumably he just is like 5 feet away from the beachfront and they just don't see him.
He's a parrot head apparently based on the way he dresses.
Oh yeah, no, totally. Like he Angels, I'm on my way to go see Jimmy Buffett.
Do you know, Angels, what the cheeseburger in paradise is like?
Oh my God. Maybe that's where he made his money. Maybe he's a secret Margaritaville billionaire.
Well, he's certainly not making money off of this. The amount of money that has to be going into it must be insane.
But I don't know, man. Like, if you were Bill Gates, or no, I don't know who this would be.
Warren
but like,
Buffett? Because Charlie looks like he's an older man if you see him from the back of his head.
Okay, I mean, this is still 2000. So, like, if you're an elder day Buffett or something, and you're the kind of guy who needs to be hired by Bill Gates and he has an assassin squad... You might be making $50-60 million a job. And by the way, it's corporate espionage, right? They've stolen something of mine worth potentially billions of dollars. You'd pay $50 million for that, right? I don't know, man. I mean, first of all, I'm going to go ahead and say this kind of thing exists. It's just not funny. It's just Blackwater and people end up dead or whatever.
Oh, boy.
But, like, yeah, I don't think it's that far-fetched that some of these guys have hit squads. If I've learned anything from James Bond, every billionaire has henchmen. The worst thing is, I guess, that Jeff Bezos also has your personal information. He has both things. He has two things. So I guess we're out of time here. Daniel, what's your final thoughts?
Oh boy, this movie. No. That's my final thought really here. No. This was bad. This was really bad.
Matt?
I thought it was fun. I liked it. I mean, maybe not enough to go buy the DVD like I've done to some movies we've done, but I enjoyed watching it.
I'm more in Matt's camp here. It was on Netflix, so I didn't have to pay anything for it, but like, yeah, no, this was totally enjoyable. Like I said, in the Austin Powers hierarchy, it's not as good as the first one. I'd say it's better than the second one.
Definitely better than the third. Because
definitely
third
better
sucked.
Than the third one. Like, I think Daniel's half right. It does take itself too seriously, but it still tries to be a comedy. Like, if it was 10% sillier, I think it'd be great. But, like, it has one joke. These are sexy women, and therefore they can control people. That should almost be enough. But it's a light movie. It's totally fine. I'm with Matt. I'd recommend it. I'm glad it was free to watch, but I wouldn't be upset if you saw this and enjoyed it. And again, like there's references to the fact that we're in an era where they're remaking every TV show into a movie. So like T.J. Hooker, the movie, is kind of right where you need to be. If you find that first 10 minutes funny, you'll enjoy the rest of it. If you don't, turn it off then. Because after we get the Matt LeBlanc and the Tom Green cameos, if you're not in, it doesn't get any better than that, so you're fine. Anyway, that's it for us, so thanks for listening. Subscribe, review, do whatever you can. And again, consider joining the Patreon, patreon.com/myopia. There's all sorts of stuff. There's an extra mission briefing every other month. There's an extra full episode every month. There's a movie riff four times a year. It just depends on what level you're at. And then every so often, just to mix things up, I'll give away something for free, like a movie riff for the most basic level. So, you know, thanks.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.